Seven of the ten Makos are found in Parshas Va'era. The last of the Makos to be mentioned in Parshas Va'era is the seventh Makah of Barad of Hail. Torah tells us, Hashem said to Moshe, stretch out your hand toward heaven and there will be hail in the entire land of Egypt, on man and beast and on all the grass of the field in the land of Egypt. Moshe stretched out his staff toward heaven, and Hashem sent thunder and hail, and fire went earthward, and Hashem rained hail upon the land of Egypt. There was hail and fire flaming amid the hail, very heavy, such had never been seen in the entire land of Egypt from the time it became a nation. Then the Chumash goes on to describe how Moshe Rabbeinu, when asked to remove the hail, left the city, which was unusual from the other Makos. He prayed within the city, and the hail stopped. And it's interesting to note that the Mefarshim point out that the hail almost, being Medayik and the Chumash, almost stopped mid-air. And the Mefarshim point out, the Medrash points out, that this hail was used again in the time of Yoshua, in the wars, one of the wars, as well as this hail is going to be used in the times of the Yemos HaMashiach, the times of the war of Gog Magog. So obviously this hail has tremendous importance. It's not only the hail for the here and now, but rather hail that will be used in the future as well. The one Nakuda that I'd like to speak about, obviously there's a lot to talk about, and we will touch on why Moshe Rabbeinu had to leave the city to David in this particular Makkah, and this plague, which he didn't in the others. And again, we'll touch on that a little bit, which is really a shear in its own right. I'd like to focus in on one Nakuda, one idea today. And that is the way the Chumash emphasizes how this hail, this barad, was a combination of fire and water. The way Rashi describes it, based on the Medrash in Source 2, Rashi says, Neis betoch neis, ha'esh va'bara muravim va'barad ma'im hu, v'laso ritzon konam asu shalom b'nehem. Flaming amid the hail, it was a miracle within a miracle. As Rashi notes, the first miracle was that fire shot downward, though it usually rises. And the second was that fire and water function in unison. Why? To serve Hashem, fire and water made peace with one another. Now, obviously, there are quite a number of questions on this Rashi. Question one, which the Pnimei Das asks, they're not feeling the fire and water. What does this mean to make peace among them? So we need to understand that aspect of Rashi. We need to understand what the aspect of, or really the imagery of peace is all about for our own lives. Obviously, whatever is found in Chumash is something that has a universal message for all times. What is this message of peace and its relevancy to our lives? And in general, we need to understand why was it necessary in this particular plague to have the fire and water together. Would not have been enough just to have fire. Barad, you know, this is the season of winter storms, right? Yerushalayim was covered under snow. It's not barad, it's not the hail enough. Why was it necessary to have fire and hail together? Now, obviously, as the Shem Yishmuel points out, because this was such an unusual aspect, where the two things that normally our opposites are able to work in unison, that is why it says that Moshe Rabbeinu had to neteyat yadcha. The Medrash says that God lifted Moshe above the heavens in order to perform this this miracle. And the underlying philosophy, continuing in source number two, of this Chazal is that the production of the hail demanded a miracle of the highest order, one originating in a domain far above that arena in which fire and water are opposites. When the very source, which had originally decreed upon them to be opposites, instructed to make peace, their incompatibility disappeared, and therefore, since it came from such a high place, that this Eish and Mayim that usually work in opposition are working in tandem, so Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, had to go above and beyond this earthly domain in order to create, or be the shaliach, the emissary, to bring about this miracle. It was by God's instruction that the heavens were made from a combination of fire and water. The power behind this came from a domain far higher than the origin of their compatibility, so Moshe had to go into a world above the Hegels, above the heavens, to bring forth the miraculous, apparently contradictory hailstones. And now I understand as well why Moshe Rabbeinu has to leave the city, because there was a similar force necessary to stop the hail. So obviously there's something in the hail, as we hail to the hail, to the lessons that we learn, that there's something obviously in this makkah of Barad that is really unique, that is really special, that is meant to teach us a tremendous amount of lessons. And that's what with Amir Hashem we are going to focus in on, this koach of the Barad. Let's begin with our first question. Rashi seems to say that generally fire and water don't get along, but here to do the will of God, to be this makkah, to be this plague of Barad of hail, they do get along. And they make shalom v'nehem. So as the Pnine Das Rav Vlach, and these are ideas that we've discussed in the past, but I'd like to mention again because they're so fundamental and they're so far-reaching and they have so much implication for other parts of our parsha, so that it's appropriate to remind ourselves of these ideas. So he says, El Be'er HaDavahu, Kefi She'erenu Ladat, She'kol HaNivraim, all that was created. In 6, Afilo HaDomein VaSomeach, even the inanimate and the vegetative world, B'Shorasham B'Olamot HaYonim L'Mala, they all have a Shoresh, they all have a root in the higher worlds. She'mehem Heim Shal Shalim, and it's from there that they're able to come down in this world. And in that world, Yodim Lavchim Umargishim Mikol Ma'ashenifali Ma'hem Kat. This world feels nothing, but their root, their source up in heaven, is a place of feeling. V'im Sham Lo Hayah Naseh Shalom B'nehem. If in heaven the fire and earth, in their core, in their source, weren't able to make peace, then Lo Hayta Teva Mishtaneh L'mata, then they couldn't have made peace down here, and the fire of water could not have interacted together. And this is an idea that Rav Elia Meir Bloch in his Shirei Das develops at length in one of his essays, where he says, the Ein Sur 7 Lamala Masha Ein Lamata, whatever exists in heaven exists down here on earth. There is this interrelationship where in heaven it is the most spiritual, core, sublime experience, and down here, by the time it gets down to us on earth, it becomes much more gas, much more physical, and loses a lot of that, or total, of that sense of feeling, that sense of being. That's why when we take a look at a rock down here, a rock looks like a rock, which looks like a rock. But up in Shemayim, you could have the rocks arguing, Allah yaniach atzadik eroshim, that up in heaven, they're arguing, on me, allow Yaakovinu to sleep. We look down here and we say, rocks are arguing? That's the most absurd thing we've heard. Yes, it sounds absurd to us because we look at rocks as they are found down here. We don't realize that just like in a nervous system, you know, the hand doesn't really feel, it's the brain waves from, you know, that are through the nervous system that signals from the brain to the hand, so then the hand has feeling in it, right? So likewise, the brain in Shemayim says, you know, we want Yaakovina to lay its head down here, but the hand itself, the rock itself, doesn't feel. And this is the idea he speaks about in Source 8. On Kikol Bashamayim Uva'aretz. All that is found in heaven is found on earth. It's just found in different domains. And he says this explains as well Parashira, which a lot of people have accustomed to say, which are the different songs that the different aspects of nature say. So what is Parashira, these different psukim? So he says, Shezeh harayon v'kavanah shanu motzim v'pasuk zeh ocher, anu margishim v'lmekdim imitziyuto v'tivo shel chad nivraim, u'mipnei zeh miyachasim anu elav et pasuk yilu haya ba'atzmo omer shirazu. Like we normally understand Perek Shira, like the heavens, Hashemayim Misaprim Forkel Masei Adam Akira Akia, you know, the heavens say the glory of God. We normally understand it as when we look at the heavens, it's as if they are speaking of the glory of Hashem. Not that actually the heavens say this, but this is what we attribute these different forms of nature to say. But he says no. The answer is of Obemep Shutam Sheldvarim Hayim Kikol Nivrimatsmam Omimet Hashira. No, in reality, the entire world, whatever it is, the heavens, the earth, the ants, they're all saying the Parak Shira. You're right. not the way that they're found down here, but rather the way they're found b'mitziutam ha'amitit b'sharasham, in their core way, the way they're found in heaven. And that helps us to explain as well how the land is able to sin and say, I don't want the fruit trees, the bark to taste like the fruit. And it explains how the land can get punished because there is this level of choice. Like Malachim can sin, these forces as well can sin. And that explains in our parsha how the Chazal teach us that because Moshe Rabbeinu was protected by the Or as a child, by the Nile, so therefore he doesn't hit the Nile in the plague of blood or in the plague of frogs. And because he was able to bury the Egyptian whom he killed in the sand, he does not touch the sand for Makav Kinim. So this teaches us how careful we have to be with our mitos and akaras hatov, even on the inanimate. So he says, when you take a look at this, it also sounds absurd. Like, I have to be careful about an inanimate object, but how it feels, it doesn't feel. Like, what lesson is Chazal trying to teach me? I understand that if I'm sensitive to an inanimate object, how much more I'll be sensitive to a person, but it seems to be a little bit far-fetched. But if we understand, my friends, that it's not so far-fetched, if we understand that the inanimate object, although by our eyes and senses it is inanimate, but we understand that it really has a scent. We understand in the higher worlds it has, in its shorish, in its root, it has very much feeling and has very much a life force of its own, so that I can understand why we have to be so sensitive to those things that surround us. And that is in its own right a Musar Haskel, going back to our Rashi, that if the fire and water can make peace, how much more so we can make peace? What does that mean, fire and water making peace? How is that possible? In heaven, they are making peace. Because in heaven, fire and water have a personality to them. And that's a very fascinating way to look at the world around us, that we shouldn't see it as like a cold world where only, you know, humans. It's again, it sounds like a strange idea, but it's a different way of thinking. But this shtender and this chair and everything around us, even the domain, even the inanimate, have a life force to them, and hence we have to treat every single thing that we have with the respect that it deserves. And that's the Musar Haskel, that's the lesson. The other approach to looking at the same question is one of my favorite pieces of Rav Schwab in Mayan Beit HaShoeivah, where he says in Source 11, this is in Parshas B'Shalach, this piece, Shibavadai in Chochma L'Shar Balechai O Sameach U'Domei. No, different than Rav Lach. They do not have, you know, a feeling and a mindset. V'omnam Matzinu Shibasha'a She'ish Hanagash Shel Neis. However, the exception is when there's a time period of miracle. Nigneh ba'olam, harei gam ha'inyanim ha'chomriyim sheba'olam midlapshim b'tzura shel da'at u'b'chira. But at a time of miracle, then there are things, animals and domain and tzomeach, that can take on a b'chira aspect, a knowledge aspect. Hence, the Sefer Schwab, that's how the dogs that don't bark at the time of Yitzhak Mitzrayim get rewarded, right? They get the meat thrown to them. Ah, do they have Bechira? Yes. At a time of miracle, the dogs take on a sense of knowledge. And that's why we can understand what Chazal say, that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah learned a Kal v'Chomer. If the frogs jumped into the ovens, we too, for the Kiddush Hashem, we too can jump into a fiery furnace. But hold on a second. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are Balei Das, have free choice, and these frogs don't. No. At a time of miracle, plague of the frogs, they revert back to a level of Das where the frogs choose to go into the fiery furnace. And that is, that explains as well all of the things by Parsha B'Shalach, by Kriyas Yamsuf, where the Yam didn't want to split. It all has the same fundamental idea. And this is based on the Gemara that says, Rosh Hashanah 12a, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, komasa breshi bekomatanivru ledaatanivru letzivyonamivru, which means on the simple pshat level, it's that when the creation was created, it was created with knowledge. We say this in our Shabbos morning davening. In the bracha Kriyat Shema, before Kriyat Shema, Yitzaram Bidad Bivino Bahaskel. Hashem created it with knowledge, with understanding, and therefore you can have in the original creation the sun and the moon arguing, and the grass and the tree saying, "I don't want the bark of the tree tastes like the fruit of the tree," because when they originally created, they had this dad. However, he says that when it came time, v'rakishabat Hakadosh Baruch Hu v'niyachat olam v'atzav shel davar nigmar v'kavalo seder v'teva av nisharu kol hadvarim achumriim b'litas. When Hashem brought Shabbos into the world, which was to a certain degree the finish of the creative process, so then they were frozen into a world of b'litas without knowledge. However, when the world reverts back to a level of almost back to that creative process where it breaks the rules of nature, in simple English, when it comes back to the world of the miraculous, then these inanimate objects and these items take on that pre-Shabbos mentality of Yitzhar, Vidas, Vina, Vahaskel. And hence we can have fire and water making peace, because at a time of the miracles, then fire and water indeed take on a personality of their own. So again, to answer our original, our first question of they making peace among them, how is it possible for fire and water to make peace? This is a much deeper question than just the fire and water. It's how do we look at the inanimate aspects of creation? And again, what we've seen here, just to summarize, is two approaches. The approach of the Shirei Das, the Telzer, Rosh Yeshiva, Tzatzal, is that indeed everything has in their shoresh, like that brain that sends out the signals, even though we don't see it down here. And the second approach is that no, it is inanimate. Inanimate is an inanimate as you can get. This table is a table is a table. However, at a time of miracle, we go back to the way it was created, a Maisa Breshi, Yitzara B'dap, Avinu B'Haskel, and it takes on a world of its own, and therefore you can have frogs jumping into fires, and you can have fire and water making peace with each other. Having understood this, we still then have to ask ourselves, okay, let's put this on the back burner, so to speak, the boiling water on the back burner of the idea of making peace, but let's ask ourselves, why is it necessary? What do we learn from the fact that fire and water were found in this plague? Why did Hashem need to have both? Would not one of them be enough? So, different than Rashi, which is to teach us about making peace, and we'll go back to Rashi, Mirtz Hashem, and look at it more in depth, let's try to understand two other approaches of why fire and water were necessary. One is Minchat's Michal in Source 13, and he says something very fascinating. He says, the Medrash tells us that we know that the Egyptians worshipped the sheep, and therefore they asked the Jews to be the shepherds outside the city, and the Jews had to live with these animals. So Moshe Rabbeinu wanted the people, like a mita keneged mita, to feel what it's like to live with the animals. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu in this plague said, those who are yirei dvar Hashem, those who fear Hashem, should take their animals and bring them inside to their houses. And this was like, so to speak, a punishment that they should know what it's like to have, to live with animals in your house, right? I'm not talking about your cute little dog. I'm talking about, you know, like herds of sheep in your house. Try it sometime, or maybe not. So, and that's why he says Moshe Rabbeinu had to go out of the city to daven, because now all their avodah zarah, right, it's their sheep, it's inside the city. So he leaves the city to daven. What does this have to do with fire? So he says there were some chachmalavs, people who thought they could outsmart Moshe Rabbeinu. And they said, you know what, we're not going to bring the sheep inside. We're going to create like mini shelters outside of our houses to have our slaves and our sheep there. And these guys, since they're, so to speak, inside, will be saved, and then we'll make Moshe Rabbeinu look at, as a liar. So that's why the fire comes down. This is what he says in Source 13. Muvah b'divrei chazal she'erei dvar Hashem kipshuto. They brought them inside. But there were others who made a machseh shaloi erei aleihem habarad. that they would be just enough of a protection that they wouldn't get affected by the hail, and they'd be sharu b'chaim, even though they were outside of their houses. Therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu brought down the fire, shetisrof lahem et hakol, that everything should be burned, that there shouldn't be any type of protection, and the Moshe Rabbeinu's word would be upheld completely. So why was the fire necessary? This is a technical answer. The fire was necessary to punish those who thought that they could outsmart the words of Moshe Rabbeinu and prove him to be a liar. They created the protection from the hail, but they didn't realize that there'd be a fire as well, and the fire burnt up all that those mini shelters that they created, but only in the house was once safe. A second answer that Rav Druk brings in Drash Mordechai, which is such a profound answer, and this again is such a good reflection and indication of the godless of learning and the beauty of learning. And listen to what he says. 14 asterisks. V'yesh lomar shabarad shaya b'mitzrayim chaviv haya lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This Barad was very beloved to Hashem, right? And hence it's going to be around in the future as well. It just doesn't disappear. Like all the other makos, goodbye, good luck, have a nice life. Barad will be around in the future. Why? What was so special about Barad? One of our original questions. Listen to what he says. Ki hu notzar mikoach ha'anachot ha'charishiyot shel b'nei Yisrael u'b'chol achad miptitei ha'barad ha'yusfugot imoteyem shel ish v'isha tinok v'tinok ha'b'nei Yisrael. What was the barad made out of? These waters was made out of the tears of the Jewish people who were crying out to Hashem. Ha'sovlim v'nenakim b'shibud Mitzrayim, who were suffering from the hardship. Vayin achu b'nei Yisrael, vayin tzaku b'nei Yisrael. Every cry, every sigh went up to Shemayim, broke the heavens. And from midimoteyam harotchot, from their burning tears, the fire of the hail was created. What an imagery. The hail, the water represents the tears. But they're not just regular tears. They're passionate tears. They're intense tears. There's tears of pain. There's the imagery, again, it's boiling tears. The passionate tears. The intense tears. And hence, that's reflected in the fire in the hail. These tears are what punish the imagery. Neis betoch neis hayab aran mayim veish muroyim yachad. And they did, they came together to protect Hashem's children. D'ma'ot kamayim v'anachot muravot yachad badam hen yitzirot miyuchadot ha'mesugalot lichvosh et eish chamat harasha'im. This had the ability to break the enemy, to kill them here, to kill them in times of Yeshua, and it's what's going to kill them in the times of Mashiach as well. And he says, recognize that anacha achat tamit paretzet milibo shel yudi echat mishkala rav vegadol hi ola hashamayma o milida militzim tovim. Every single cry of anguish that any Jew expresses goes straight up to Shemayim, is beloved to Hashem, is cherished by Hashem. We speak about this imagery in the Ila of the bottle, of the Nodcha, which is Malet Maos, which is filled with tears. My friends, this is such a powerful idea that we just have to pause for a moment. You know, one thinks that the shibud, the hard work, you know, we're screaming, we're yelling, we're in pain, we're in anguish, we're being beaten, and like, Hashem is impervious and oblivious to all this. Not at all. And it's not only to the pain and the oppression in Egypt, it's each and every one of ours calling out, each and every one of our pain, each and every one of our cries out to Hashem is taken by Hashem, is embraced by Hashem. No tear goes ever unheard, ever unwatched. ever dealt with. These were the tears that formed the barad, which was the punishment of the Egyptians. What a gefilte! The imagery is just so powerful. And this is, I think, the imagery that one of the lessons we learn in 16 and 17 of Rav Wolbe and Alei Shur. If this is the imagery of Imo Anochi B'Tzara we spoke about last week, that when a Jew is in pain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mishtatef in that pain. It's the idea of Menose Ba'olim Chaveiro, to carry that yoke with your friend. The most that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had, we've spoken about in the past, that Livnat HaSapir, that sapphire brick under his feet, Kivyachol, under the Kisei HaKavo, which reminded HaKadosh Baruch Hu of our suffering in Egypt. Hashem feels our pain. When we're in pain, the Gemara tells us, Hashem says, I'm in pain, my head hurts me, my arm hurts me, whatever it is. Because we shouldn't think that whatever we're experiencing alone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, He counts those tears, and He allows no tear to go unwatered and not dealt with in the correct way. And obviously the lesson for us, and this is what we spoke about last week, so I don't want to belabor the point, is how careful we have to be in Matati Odeo to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That if HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels our pain and takes it kivyochol to heart, then we too must feel the pain of others and take their pain to heart as well. And it's interesting because after I spoke about this last week, a woman came over to me and said to me that since the summer she started davening for 9 kalas, that people should get 9 women, that they should become kalas, that they should get married. And she says, Kapitzel Tillim, she showed me her Tillim that she says every day. And she says, since the summer, 4 of these people have become kalas. And she says, it was almost a sense of excitement. She said, if you really, exactly this idea, feel someone's pain, and you act on that pain, that's no se ba'olim chaveru, that you act, you don't only feel, you daven for them, you do what you can do. This is the feeling of Imo Anochi B'Tzara, and that no pain, no tear, no pain of somebody else goes unnoticed. Good. So we now understand that they made peace. In the higher worlds, they made peace. It's a time of nature. We understand why was fire necessary as a punishment to those Egyptians who tried to outsmart Moshe. Or it's the fire in the water represents these hot tears of the Jewish people, of their oppression, which are now coming to come punish the Egyptians. We'll just note here in sourceless, above 19, where Rav Munk, in the Kol of Torah, points out that the Medrash has a disagreement what exactly, how did this fire look like. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemi disagree about the fire's significance. Rabbi Yehuda contends that the hail was transparent and filled with fire like a pomegranate whose seeds are visible within. Thus the fire appeared as a source and generator of the rain and hail. However, Rabbi Nechemi compares the hail to a lamp with a flame burning above layers of water and oil. Here the water is but a support for the oil, which feeds the fire. That's more of a technical, even though we can understand this metric, understanding. Let's try to understand the idea of Rashi to make peace with one another, what the fire and water is about. Let's start with the Mishchat Shemen Rav Kofman, where he says, the Yeshlit Bonein, source 18, L'Shemah Hutzrach, Shidun Marachot said, why was it necessary to change nature in this way? Just send down hail. So he says, V'nira shatar aval rameis kan malach nifla b'seder avodas Hashem shal Adam Yisrael. Teaching us a lesson. V'haynu ki ne nezeh sha'eshim amayim yasu shalom b'neihem, that to have the eshimayim make peace, like shemayim, is really a combination of eshimayim, the heavens, is to teach us the paradigm and the importance of peace. If we know for a moment in Source 19, the Tiva Torah of Gamliel Rabinowitz says that this is taka, the lesson that we learn here about for our lives. He says, if fire and water, which are so great opposites, are able to make peace, the kama limud hu la'adam, the asterisk in 19, shim shnei domamimos sim shalom b'neihem l'man kvod habore, if for the sake of God, two forces can make peace, how how careful we have to be with human beings, that we're all here in this world for the same purpose, and that's to serve Hashem. So for crying out loud, why can't we get along? And he says sometimes people don't want to make peace between them because their nature is so different. There are those who have the nature, mimakor ha'esh, from fire, which is anger and control, and there are those who have another teva, that's my, and they're more lovable, likable people, and they're full of chesed, lashviya tova olam, and they try to bring goodness into this world. And people say, you know what, our personalities are so different, there's no way we can get along, and that's what brings a lot of machloket, that's what brings a lot of the arguments in this world. Valenu lomot, and this is what we have to learn, that if the fire and water are able to get along to do Ritzon Hashem, kol shekein b'nei adam, how much more so us? Shein v'alei deya, we who have knowledge, tzrichim lashlim zeh zeh, afilu k'shateva soteret achad hashini. Even if you have different personalities, that doesn't mean you don't have to. You can't get along. It doesn't mean you can't work together, because we're all here for one purpose, my friends. We're all here to do Ritzon Hashem. That's why we're all here. You may do it in this way, and I may do it in that way, and I may have these strengths, and you may have those strengths, but that's irrelevant. We're each using our strengths as well as our weaknesses to be able to accomplish the same goal, and that's to do Ritzon Hashem, the will of Hashem. And therefore, there is no reason why people can't get along. And this is what Rav Schwab speaks about in Source 20, that Birkas Kohanim ends, V'yaseim l'cha shalom. And shalom means a lot of things. It means peace in the world. It also means peace between man and man. This form of peace is expressed in the Medrash, B'knisiyatcha shalom, b'siyatcha shalom im kol adam. This form of peace also includes shalom bayis, peace between husband and wife, peace between parents and children. And obviously the highest form of peace is an inner peace, one's own personal peace of mind, and this is the peace of the neshama. And these are all included in our struggle to create peace in this world. And that's hail to the hail. When we look toward the hail, it is hailing us, so to speak, to learn this lesson. If fire and water can get along, why can't we get along with our spouses, with our children, with our neighbors, with our friends, with our community, with whoever it is, and be able to make peace and create unity, because we're all here for the same purpose of to do Ritzon Avinu Shebashamayim, the will of Hashem. That's one understanding of this Medrash of Shalom that Rashi talks about. The second one is what the Mishrat Shemen himself brings down. And he says, Hashem created opposites in this world for at times the opposites to function in opposite ways, and at times for the opposites to function together when Hashem wants them to. V'omek havana, the end of 21, b'metziu zuhi, ki tachlis b'riyas ha'olam hayta kidei shi'tzarei b'riya yavdu et Hashem. Which you just mentioned, the whole purpose here is to serve Hashem. And everyone in the way that it can do that. And sometimes, aval kashir l'tzarech avodayim tzrichim l'shanot tivam, harayim mishtanim miyan mitchabrim b'seder nitzrech l'tzarech avodat Hashem. And at times we have to change our nature to do Hashem's will. Now, he says, if we take a look within ourselves, we also have a certain contradiction that is found inherently within us, that is able to work in tandem, one with each other, because this is Ritzon Hashem, the will of Hashem. And that is the guf and the neshama, the body and the soul. We say in the bracha of Asher Yotzer, Rofe Kol Basar Umafli Lasot. So the Rama points out, what is the mafli lasot? What's the pele? What's the wonder here? That the mafli lasot possesses Shomer Ruach HaAdam in 22, Bekirbo, Vekoshet Davar Ruchani, Vedavar Gashmi. Here I have something spiritual that's found and is striving in something physical. Usually the physical and the spiritual are at odds with each other. Within the human body, they're able to work together. But Zeh Muvan 23 Madu Ishlimo Eishim Amayim. To this is why this week understand why the fire and water made peace, because here they were trying to teach the Mitzri a very important principle, right? And all of these are teaching us principles in Amuna. Leman Teda Ki Ani Hashem Bekarav Aretz, that you should know that I am Hashem among the land. Bekarav Aretz, to recognize that the Ruchnias and the Gashmias are not something that is separate. But if you want to serve Hashem, you have to be able to integrate the physical and the spiritual together. This is the lesson that we learn from the Makav Barat. Leman teda ki ani Hashem bekerev haaretz, within, among. And this is a lesson to, not only to the Egyptians, because we know that wasn't only a lesson to them, but a lesson to the Jews as well, is that recognize that opposites can get along. And that if you're doing Ritzon Hashem, they don't have to be at odds with each other. And this is the physical and the spiritual can be able to function in tandem together to do the will of Hashem. It's interesting because this is indeed in Source 26 one way of understanding the Chacham's, the Rasha's question at the Seder table. The Rasha says, Ma havodah hazot lachem? What is this service to you? Klomar, Sharasha ino mevin ech yuchal hadam lasot bedvarim shel gashmios. The Rasha, the wicked son, can't understand how can you be involved in the physical world? Ulekayim behem mitzvah ruchanit, and yet be able to do something spiritual. Right? And this is, the question among different religions and philosophy. What's the body-soul relationship? V'zo she'lat maha v'da hazo. B'chol ha'dvarim ha'oskim v'inyanim shel lachem. What is this? This avoda, this high, lofty service, doing in lachem. Lachem is the physical things. In the physical world, it seems like a stira. And that's how we say to him, afata ketchinav, knock out his teeth. Because if he doesn't understand that we eat for to be able to serve God and to have spiritual, sustenance as well as physical sustenance, or physical sustenance for the spiritual sustenance, he's missed the boat here, right? He would have been redeemed because the whole concept of redemption, the whole concept of the lesson that Hashem is trying to teach the Jewish people as they are becoming a nation, and this is the concept that's found in the seventh Makkah as well as others, is the idea of being able to live in tandem, two opposites. The physical and the spiritual can work hand in hand with each other. Obviously, and this is continued in 28, V'al kopanim lumedim anu, continues the Mishnah Shem and Rav Kofman, Shevodat ha'isha Yisraeli eina shifrosh l'gamer miskei olam hazeh gashmiim. It's not about secluding yourself, separating yourself, and leading an aesthetic life. God doesn't need any more angels. He has plenty of them upstairs. Hashem doesn't want that down here. Right? Anshei Kodesh Tiyunli. He wants people down here on Nashim of Kedusha, as the Kutzker Rebbe says. Elachovas Adam Hu, Shekol Masav, Shosei Binyanei Olam, Yaseh Otam, Bekavanah, Tarah, Vitzurah, Haruya. Our challenge is that what we do down here in the physical world should be done with the appropriate mindset in the appropriate way. Dahainu, which means that our achila, our eating, and anything else that we do, yiyu be'ofen shel kedusha v'yisroel, we've spoken a lot about this, should be in ways of elevation, not just to run after food because it's a taiva, because it tastes good, because I want physical pleasure. But I'm doing this so that I have the ability to eat in order to serve Hashem properly. And that's why Hashem B'davka wants us to eat and drink and have nice clothes on Shabbos and Yom Tov specifically. That's how we celebrate these experiences. Because the spiritual and the physical should go and need to go hand in hand with each other. And this is Beferish Shulchan Aruch writes in Mechaber. Bechol ma sheyene ba'olam and orachayim siman reish lamed aleph. Hazeh lo yechavein la'anato elu l'vodat ha'barei yitbarach. It's a famous halacha, right? Not just for the great tzaddikim, for each one of us. That the Mechaber writes that whatever enjoyment we have in this world, we should be able to understand and have kavana that's not for my personal enjoyment as much as it is for the service of Hashem. Kidichtiv v'mishlei kimuva b'chol drachecha da'egu. In all your ways, know Hashem. And a rabbi said, kol ma'asecha yu l'shem shemayim. Whatever we do, for it should be for the sake of heaven. This idea of all that we should be for the sake of heaven in the Sefer Ethics from Sinai, he notes in 30, we know that Judaism does not outlaw or prohibit the physical pleasures of life, eating, drinking, marriage, all are integral parts of the total life of the Jew. But since actions for physical pleasure are so closely related to the bestial and ugly, how can they form an integral part of a spiritual life in Torah? That's how Rabbi Yossi advises, let all your deeds be for the sake of heaven. Endow these activities with the right intentions, with a proper purpose. Why should we eat? To keep the body healthy. Why do we need a healthy body? So that our minds may also be healthy, that we may be mentally and physically able to observe the mitzvot and be complete Jews. Thus, even the most lowly activity can be done for the sake of heaven as a part of the worship of the Almighty. And this very beautiful idea of the Rav Chaim of Voloshin in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, he says, Yeshaya HaNavi has a prophecy. The prophecy goes the following. As the rain comes down and the snow from heaven, and does not return there until it waters the earth and makes it bear and sprout, giving produce to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall be my word that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty, until it shall accomplish that which I have wanted and succeed where I have sent it. The word geshem, rain, also denotes physical matter, says Rav Chaim Voloshin in general. Gashmir. Now, it is our religious belief that all physical blessings come from Hashem, bestowed upon us by a beneficent Almighty. But what sense do they return there? I understand the rain cycle, the nitrogen cycle, right? The clouds and the water, and it all goes back up. I don't know, I probably learned it in fifth grade or something. For every process that happens, there's a reverse or corrective process which keeps things in balance. Even so, there must be a vaster cycle which unites the physical and the spiritual. We merit all material things by the grace of Hashem. The siklio, return to heaven, is accomplished when a person responds with a bracha, a blessing, acknowledging his indebtedness and gratitude to the Almighty. It is achieved when a person uses the bounty he has received to live a life under Torah, when he knows Hashem in all his ways and conducts his physical activities with a central spiritual intent. In this manner, physical matter leads to spiritual value. The word of Hashem returns. The cycle of providence is complete. And my friends, though it sounds so simple, it's really, really very, very complex and very deep and really gets to the fundamental aspects of why we're here in this world. That there is this interrelationship between the physical and the spiritual. And when I say a blessing, I have elevated that physical existence. When I recognize that my physical being is so much about being able to live a spiritual reality, so then I'm acutely aware that there are two not separate domains of my life, but there's one integrated me. And that I have to focus in on the bracha as much as on the food. I have to focus in on the mindset to exercise, that I'm doing this to have a healthy body to serve Hashem, and not just on what the treadmill is about. It's all about what I invest in that which I do, my mindset in that which I do, which enables me to be successful as an Eved Hashem. And here, Rav Schechter brings down from the Baal Shem Tov in 31, that applied this to every situation in life, so that the physical world itself furthered their avodas Hashem, and they're able to attach themselves to Hashem through every act, be it eating, drinking, or sleeping. A very famous idea of the Baal Shem Tov, that the world is a mirror, and everything we see helps us grow in our avodas Hashem. The way we respond, and why we respond this way, gives us an insight into who we are. The whole world, every moment, is about potential service of Hashem. There's nothing devoid of Hashem. And that has to be our challenge, to be on that mindset, on that groove, so to speak, of the record, so that wherever the record plays, we know it's playing a spiritual message and has a spiritual value. It's interesting, if we go up to the top of this page, by the 28, above the 30, the Mishnah Shemin points out that it's not only the physical aspects in life that we have to have the right kavana, that we're doing it l'shem shemayim. It's very fascinating. He says, "Ela av kasher oskim b'dvarim shebikdusha v'avodas habara." Even when we're involved in spiritual things, gamas sarich lizaher l'kavana miniyat asiyah shelo l'chaven l'shem hatoelat hatzmi shetitzmachlo. Rak lizkor hatachlif amatarashit l'karev l'shem yiparach v'avodato. You can also, and this is a very fascinating idea, be involved in something spiritual for your own self, because I enjoy this experience. Why am I davening? Because I like to meditate, and I feel a high when I daven. It has nothing to do with God, it has to do with you. Right? Why do I like going to holy rabbis? Not because I come closer to Hashem. I just like the aura and the energy in the room. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel connected. Connected to what? Who knows? We have to be careful that when we're talking about living a life of the Chol Ma'asecha Yu L'Shem Shamayim, it's the entirety of our lives have to be connected with this reality, and that even our spiritual things have to be done for the sake of heaven. And the Kutzker Rebbe says this clearly. Rebbe Twersky brings down in Visions of the Father in 32. Let us not forget that all one's actions, v'chol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim, even the things that are done for the sake of heaven, must be done for the sake of heaven. What Remendel meant by the statement is that we must take care that the Torah mitzvot we do should not be diluted by personal interest or improper behavior. Rabbi Yisrael Salant said the most difficult contentment to eliminate in performance of a mitzvah may be something that a person considers to be proper and worthy. As an example, someone is in so great a hurry to attend a lecture on Torah that he is rude and pushes people out of his way. His haste to go to the lecture is not at all a virtue. Yet this person may think he is doing God's will by hurrying to the Torah lecture. Be careful, the Kutzker Rebbe said, that when you do a mitzvah, you do it the way Hashem wants it to be done. And this is what the Mishchat Shemen echoes at the end in 33, that he says that everything has to be bekavanah kedosha, nitzrach l'adam hachana, v'sponenus rabbah. We have to put in a lot of thought into this, and we have to be able to realize that this is why we're here in this world, and we have to be able to have that focus, that we're here to do the Ritzon of Hashem, the will of God. So if we summarize what we've seen till now, my friends, before we do our final idea, we have the idea that the Barad was something out of the ordinary. It came from the highest levels of heaven, hence Moshe Rabbeinu had to like be lifted up above the heavens in order to bring down the Barad. What was so intense about the Barad? It was fire and water together, which are two opposites. It was to teach us that they can make peace between them, and again, on a certain level, they have the ability to feel that peace up in the heavens and the source, or in the time of the miracles, they feel it down here, whatever that may mean. Why was the fire necessary? To punish the Egyptians who tried to outsmart Moshe Rabbeinu, or the fire are the hot tears of the Jewish people, and that is Mida Keneged Mida, the exact punishment. No cry, no tear goes unheard of by Hashem. Hashem feels all of our pain. And again, I'm very drawn to this answer, and I think that we have to realize that whatever we are going through, and we cry out, and we're in pain, and we groan, and we moan, don't think that it's, you know, cry that's unheard. Of course not. It's a cry that's definitely heard, and it's a cry that's ultimately going to punish the nations in the future at the time of Gog Magog, Mitzrayim being the paradigm of all exile. Their tears is really encompassing the tears of all the Jews from all of history, the Tach V'Tach, the Chomnitsky riots, the Holocaust, etc. What is the lesson that we can learn for ourselves about the Rashi, that if they can make peace, we can make peace? So we saw two approaches. One is the Tifa Torah, that people need to learn how to make peace. You can't say, well, I'm fire and they're water, I can't get along. No, you may be different personalities, but to do Ritzon Hashem, the will of Hashem, everyone has the ability to get along one with each other, and that's what we're being taught here. The second idea is the fire and water represents us. It represents our challenge within ourselves to have the physical and the spiritual. And we almost say to each other, well, pick one. You know, I want to be a physical being who's going to eat, drink, be merry. Or I want to be a spiritual being. You know, I'm on a mountaintop, davening all day at the hotel. And the answer is no. That Hashem created us to be a mixture of the water and fire together, to be able to get along together, to be able to make peace together. And in spiritual things, as well as in physical things, we have to prepare ourselves beforehand. Hineni muchan mesuma, behold, I'm preparing myself to sleep in order to have energy to serve Hashem. Behold, I'm preparing myself to eat, to be energy to serve Hashem. Behold, I'm working out in the gym, so I have a healthy body to serve Hashem. Whatever it is, I am able to integrate the physical and the spiritual together, the fire and the water, because my prime focus in this world is Avodas Hashem. Our final piece for today, my friends, is a very fascinating one, of what is the lesson of the fire and the water. And this is Rav Wilson in Emunati Techa. And he takes us on a little bit of a journey before we get to the Barat. He says, we know that Hashem and Klal Yisrael are connected through Ahava, through love. And the love that Hashem has for us is Ahava, Rabba, Ahava, Sola. It is such an intense love. Habocher, Ba'amu, Shabba, Ahava. Hashem chooses us with love. So if Hashem has so much love for us, why don't most people feel this love back? And he says, Achim Sibat HaDavar, the Dad in 35, Kimita Sa'ava HaNishpat, Kasher Ein Mitzam Sinota, Him Mitpashetet L'chutz L'tanugei Olam HaZeh, V'segarim Hafseid Ahava HaRuya. What happens is, if you don't keep that love in check, that love is going to spread into so many different areas. I love ice cream, I love fish, I love vacations, I love cars, I love, I don't know, whatever I love. Right? I love so many different things that the love isn't able to be directed and contained in the love of Hashem. And this is the idea that Baal Shem Tov speaks about in the Arrow 35 on the Pasuk, Ish asher yikached achoto chesedu. If a brother takes a sister as a wife, it's called a chesed. Because if you take your sister, what you're doing is you're taking someone you love. It's a chesed, but it's a chesed that has no bounds. It's love that's an inappropriate type of love. Our job is to be able to take this love in the appropriate fashion. And that is to have love, the dot of the circle, in Yiras Elokim. To have love with the fear of Hashem. That your love is able to have a container, that it's not going to be just, you know, I love everybody, I'm going to marry my sister, because I love the world. That's an inappropriate love. You have to be able to take love and be able to have, right, that's Tiferet. The Chesed and the Kvura have the medium together is Tiferet. The Chesed needs to be balanced by the Kvura. And that's why the Arizal on the Dot in 36 says that it's imperative to learn Musar every day in order to awaken a person for Yiras Hashem. You just can't be, oh, I love. Like, what does that mean? Where does it fit practically? You have to understand the relationship. And you also have to stand a bit in awe as well. And this is what the city Yushalayim is about, where Shem Bei Noach called the city Shalem, wholeness, and Melchizedek called it Shalem. Melchizedek was Melch Shalem. Shem Bei Noach called it this. And Aravinu called it Yireh, Behar Hashem Yireh. And Hashem put the two together. Yerushalayim is a place of Shlemus because it has Yira in it. You want to reach wholeness, you need to have that awe, that fear. And he notes here, for those of you who like the wordplay, if you take the numerical value of Yira, fear, out of the numerical value of Yerushalayim, you get Mitzrayim, Egypt. Mitzrayim, we know, was the place of Zima. Mitzrayim was the place of promiscuity. Because Mitzrayim was the place where love went unchecked. And that's why it's not by accident in 37 that the Yishmael took, not, a rabbi said they took Teisha Kabim Zima, nine aspects, or 10 aspects of promiscuity that came into the world, Yishmael took 9 of them. V'haynu chesed b'li simsum. Yishmael was Avraham Avinu's child. He took the chesed of Avraham Avinu. But he took it unlike Yitzchak, who took it with Yira, with boundary. He took it without boundary. That's why it's not by accident he took a wife from Yitzrayim, because it's one and the same. It's a place of Zima. It's a place where there is no boundary. And that's why when Avraham Avinu goes to the Akedah in 37, he doesn't go to the Akedah in 37, but in Source 37, when it talks about Avraham Avinu going to the Akedah, it says, Vayechu Shneihem Yachav, they both went together. Avraham, who is Chesed, Yitzchak, who is Yira. And what does he take with him? The Eish, the fire, because Avraham Avinu is Chesed. He needs to have that balance of Chesed, of Yira, of this awe of Hashem. And he goes one step further. We're going to get to Barat, don't worry about it. He says in 38, the Jewish people we know uses a lunar calendar, while the nations use a solar calendar. He says the moon represents Himidat HaChesed. The moon, which is white, represents love, and the sun, which is Gvura, which is that Yira, that strength, is Admimiyut, which is like this fire, this redness, which represents the bloodshed, the Gvura of the nations of the world. Now we understand that not only do the Jews use the lunar calendar, but the Yishmaelim, the Arabs do as well. But what's the difference? This year is a perfect example. This year is a leap year, where even though the Jews use a lunar calendar, they always keep it in sync with the solar calendar, while the Arabs don't. The Arabs just use a lunar calendar, and that's why their holidays will fall out at different months of the year. And it just is like a cycle. Sometimes it's Ramadan is in the summer, sometimes it's the winter, sometimes in the spring, sometimes in the fall. And their calendar is totally out of whack because they are kol kulo levona. They are completely chesed. There is no balance. Jews, yes, are chesed, but they also need to be in sync with the solar calendar. We had another month this year, Adar Sheni, Adar Beis, because we need to have chesed with the sun, with Gvura. We need to have that balance together. And it's interesting, he notes in 39, that in the way we write, there's a difference as well. That both the Arabs as well as the Jews write. Right? For those who remember how to write, in another 10 years or so, it's going to be a lost art. But for those of you who still know how to write and will hang on to this and show your children one day what a pen and pencil is, it's going to be an interesting sight, almost like the quill and feather. We write, the Jews write, from right to left. From right is chesed to gvura. Because our primary aspect is chesed, is kindness, but it has to be balanced with gvura. The nations write from left to the right, because they start with gvura toward chesed. Their prime focus is the aspect of gvura, of strength. Now, what does this all have to do with Barbat? So it's very nice and very fascinating. What does it have to do with Barbat? So the Arizal notes in the Dot in 39 that all the makos are connected to different midos, the different, chesed, gvura, right? Starting from the bottom up. So therefore, he says that Dam is keneged midas malchus, Tzardeya is keneged yesod, and therefore Barad, toward the top, is keneged chesed. Barad, ikaro mayim hashayef l'midara chesed. Barad, whole essence, is the mida of chesed, of kindness, which is why it was water, which is chesed, and all of these, tanugim, all of these pleasures. And that's why so many things were broken. The language is used, v'chol etzah sadesh shavar. There was a brokenness going on here because it was like a chesed that was just an overpowering chesed. But we know that each makkah, which came as a punishment for the Egyptians, was a healing for the Jews. In what way was it a healing for the Jews? That it had the fire in it, because the fire represented the Yira. So the Bara represents that Klai Israel know that there's a lot of chesed in this world, but I want you to also realize that you have to have Gvura and Yira, strength and awe. You don't love everyone in this world, you love your wife, you love your husband, you love, what's appropriate to love, right? Not extramarital affairs. That you need to take the love, right? You can love food, but you're not a navo b'shut satara, and you're not a glutton, you eat all day. You need to be able to keep this in check. And that's why v'inyan zeh lo haya klal avur hanagof l'mitzrayim ki mishvir rafo l'Yisrael. That's why in the warning he doesn't even mention the fire, because the fire had nothing to do with the Egyptians, said Rav Olson. The fire was purely for the Jews. The water, the hail, was for the Egyptians as a demonstration that they are above and beyond in chesed, that they're like over the top, right? And shvir is like hailing, everything breaks. For the Jews, the fire comes and says, chesed is very nice, and it's very good to have chesed, but you also have to keep the solar in mind. You also have to have the gvura in mind. You need to have a balance. And this is the idea of why the Barad is kept for Yemos HaMashiach. He says, in 41, we know in Ikvas and Mashiach, Medinas America, Naseh Mirkaz L'Gabrut HaChesed D'Klipa. In our generation, America is a wonderful place, and it's not only America, it's Western culture that represents its chesed that's gone over and above. Shechadashim luvkarim amseim ofanim chadashim larbot tanukei ben adam. Every day they come up with new pleasures that a person can be involved with in this world, and all these machshirim, all of these devices that you can have every ta'iva, every abominable thing that you can imagine in your chadrei chadarim, in your private rooms. And what used to be done, you know, in private, quietly, and it was against the law, and no one would ever talk about it, has now become what? The Klipa de Mitzrayim, the Mishmal, Shehit, Pashtur, Echetze, Blitzum, Sum, Yira, is now Matir to everybody. And this, my friends, is a very apt description of the generation that we're in, the Ikvas of the Mashiach, the war of the Gog and Magog, which is the war of this chesed gone wild, where it's all about pleasure. It's all about what you want. You want to watch pornography, gesund to hate. You want to have, you know, relationships with other women on the line, whatever you want. It's a klipa of Yishmael and Mitzrayim. That's what we're living in now, right? When we talk about Chai Vatim Lo Tatsu Akilu Yatsa Mitzrayim, that's such a deeper meaning in our generation. We have to see ourselves as we left Egypt. We have to leave this klipa. We have to leave this type of tumah. Something else. And v'hayir lufisha mechava gogo mago heed pashtur echesed de klipa. It's a barad below eish. And therefore, the barad is being kept up in Shemayim to remind us, it's almost there in an invisible way. This can't happen. You need to bring Yira Shemayim into this picture. And that is why Moshe Rabbeinu has to daven outside the city. Because this tefillah has to be a tefillah that's going to be a tefillah that's going to reach Yushalayim. This is going to be a tefillah above and beyond this world. It's a tefillah that has to be about the Yira. That the Barad up in that heaven is that imagery to each one of us. Again, hail to the hail. That every morning we always have to look up and see that invisible hail about to rain down on Gog and Magog, that you have to keep yourself in check. You have to, if you're going to have these devices, to have filters. And if you have filters, have more filters. And if you have more filters, then even add more filters to the filters. There's no end on how careful we have to be, how careful our children have to be. We're living in a world where, my daughter was looking on, I gave her a YouTube, very carefully monitor on my iPad to show her. And again, my kids only use iCodes. All they do on the computer with our permission, they don't know the code, is look at the code. I gave her, but she got a rainbow loom, a YouTube on how to make a rainbow loom. Suddenly, it went off into somewhere else. And my immediate reaction, Baruch Hashem, my kids, was, by Shem HaShem Panav, they covered their face and said, Ima, something happened. There has to be Yira here, not, wow, this is interesting. What else is here aside from rainbow looms? So you may think I'm a little bit chanyaki. That's good. I don't mind. I've been called worse. There has to be Yira with the Ava. It's not like, okay, so it's just rainbow looms and whatever else comes on. Things are jumping up at the screen in front of us at flashes that it's too late to even block what we see. And some of these things are not so, not so good. For us and for our children and our families to see how careful we have to be. This is what the fire is about. It's about Yira. As Rav Horowitz, Rabbi Pliskin brings in Consulting the Wise, he says there are three types of Yira Shemayim. There is an illusory fear of heaven, which is when people casually mark, God will help us, God should have mercy, we dive into Hashem. But even when we mention Hashem's name, we do not experience the reality of His presence, we do not think about what He wants from us, and people can go on right away going against Hashem's will. So it's the second type of fear of God, when a person sincerely cares about what the Almighty asks for him. He's intellectually aware of the Day of Judgment, and it's a rational, intellectual one, and it's a strong belief in reward and punishment, but he's missing an emotional experience of fear, and because of this deficiency, it's possible for his behavior to contradict his awareness. But it's true fear of the Almighty, this is the Barad. This is when one experiences emotionally such a strong fear of God that nothing else exists for him but this. A person on this level will have a strong love for the Almighty. A person on this level experiences so much joy in this awareness that nothing in the world can take him away from observing the Almighty's Torah. His mind is focused solely on his connection with the Creator, and he has no fear for anything else in the entire world. This emotional experience is so powerful that the person will not do anything to contradict this awareness. And that's the goal that we need to have. And the model of the Hail, according to Ralph Wolfson, of the Bara, is that for the Egyptians, it was telling them that they are the Klipa of Erva. You are a place of water going wild. But for the Jews, it's to remind us that when you have love and you have experiences where you want to be able to connect, You need to have Yirah. And it has to be an emotional experience where you feel that you're in front of Hashem at all times. And whatever we do, whatever we see, and whatever we experience, we have that awareness that Hashem is sitting right next to me. And He's watching with me, whatever I'm doing, on the iPad, on the computer, wherever it is. He is sitting there right with me. It's the Ava, I feel this closest to Him, but the Yirah of, is this appropriate to do with Hashem sitting right here near me? That feeling of being totally taken in by this type of awareness, that's the goal that we need to feel. And my friends, once again, what I think we've tried to see here is that what we seem to be just, you know, fire and water together and making peace is much more about than making peace. It's about making peace with each other. It's about making peace within me, the body and soul. And it's making peace within me on the deepest level, that the chesed and the gvura, my kindness and my strength and my gvura, my sense of power, are able to make peace within each other to create a world of tiferet, that a person has to be balanced, not over the top in love, not over the top in fear, but to be a balanced person, a shalom, a tiferet type of personality that is able to have the fire and water exist together to be able to do Ritzon Hashem, the will of Hashem.